loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I?
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Show Sports Radio 730-1039 The Ump. Couple people tweeting in about our interview that we had with Davern Williams, defensive line coach at East Mississippi Community College. Some others getting in on the Learn That Line Alabama offensive line play. We'll get to both of those in 9 minutes. 10 after tweet. You can tweet in at Cube Show, at Cole Kublick, at Arky Shea. Couple of different ways that you can be a part of the show here. 866-485-9867 if you'd like to get in via the phones. You're also able to do that. RK, I didn't know if you saw or not that SEC baseball is going to experiment with something a little bit new this next season. Have you seen some of the details on this?
Man, I can't wait.
Do you even know what it is?
No, I don't. Okay. It's SEC baseball. I'm done in July with you guys.
Apparently, baseball video review could be expanded on an experimental basis in 2018. The NCAA Baseball Rules Committee supported a request from the SEC to allow experimental rules for a coach's challenge system and wireless communication from the dugout to the catcher during in-conference competitions only. Let me say that last part again. Wireless communication from the dugout to the catcher during in-conference competition only. So similar to the quarterback, linebacker helmet, the one person that I guess is wired up in the NFL, college baseball, in particular the SEC, want the coach, manager, and catcher to be wired up for sound or audio communication. Is that going to help speed things up? If so, I'm for it. I don't have a problem with it. Is the coach going to be sitting there, like trying to? Is this an advantage where the coach can tell a player if he thinks the kid's about to steal, or are they going to be picking up signs from the other dugout saying bunt, 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 bunt? Or is it just going to be communicating pitches? And how do you, or can you, control that in any shape, form, or fashion?
Sure, you can control it. All you got to do is have someone else listening to the feed, and if they start doing things like that that you don't like, you can say, all right, we're shutting this down. Don't like this. Is it really going to speed up the game? I don't know if it's for a speed of the game issue anyway. I mean, I'm of the mindset, and I've given up on this really speeding up baseball thing about a couple years ago. There are a couple of things you can do to make things a little faster.
We're not peeling an hour off baseball games.
No, baseball's just an inherently lackadaisical game at times. You know, minor league baseball right now is doing the whole 20 seconds in between, you know, the pitch and when the next one has to be thrown. So, you know, when I was in Birmingham watching the Barons, I watched that clock go off, and I was like, man, I'm liking this. We get some pace going here.
Oh, they show it to you?
Oh, you can see it. It's like behind the catchers.
I like that.
You know?
Yeah.
So you can see it, and then I think they have 2.5 minutes in between innings is the max that you can have. And I left that game in the seventh inning, and the game was like, you know, a tick under 2 hours at that point had been played. And like, I like this pace. Now, the game was a 1-0 game when I left anyway, so that also helped when no one can get on base. But baseball, there's only so much you can do without instituting what people don't want with baseball, and that's clocks and numbers and moving the thing along like this. I like the time rule as far as pitches, time in between pitches, But there's only, again, there's only so much you can, so much time you're going to be able to take off of a baseball game. And I know you get these issues where, like, you have people like me who go to a game and like, oh, man, that game's only like 3 hours long. That game was 2 hours and 40 minutes long. And some games are just inherently shorter. National League games are just inherently shorter because you have the pitcher batting. Some games that are shorter because you have, you know, getaway days. Like when the Braves play day baseball here on the ump, it's usually right before they, during the week, before they head out for a road trip. And those games are shorter because guys aren't nearly as patient and they're waiting. Like there's almost like a tick inside them that has to just speed things along so they can hurry up and get the game going so they can be done. You know, because I guess maybe it's a little less exciting playing at noon on a Tuesday than it is.
It's weird that it works that way.
Than playing at 7 o'clock. Yeah, it is, because, like, we'll get these games going into Tom's show, and Tom will sometimes be able to get a little bit of a post-game in before his show actually starts. And so it's games going 2 hours, 30 minutes, 2 hours, 40 minutes, and they feel kind of quick that way. There's only just so much time you're going to be able to take off the sport in general that I've started just accepting baseball's just kind of a coomsie game. It's like you take some, you don't.
The challenge.
You'll get some 16 inning games, and you'll get some games that go like 2 hours and 29 minutes. You're like, that's good.
The challenge system recommendation would allow a coach one challenge to have a call overturned by video review. If the challenge is successful, coach will be able to challenge another play later in the game. If it's unsuccessful, coach loses that ability. So that's really nothing new there. Proposal also expands number of plays that can be reviewed to include forced tag play calls, base running calls involving whether a base runner passes a preceding runner before that runner is out, determinations of whether a base runner scored ahead of a third out, and upon an appropriate appeal by the defensive team, whether a base runner touched a base. The passing of a preceding runner seems like you wouldn't need replay for that, but okay.
Most times you'll be like, hey, that guy was supposed to be on first. Why is he at third? Yeah. Why's the guy that was supposed to be on second at first? Okay, I don't like this. You're out.
Hit by pitch calls.
Yeah.
You see very few of these missed. And sometimes it's like, did it get the bat? Did it get the hand? Did it get the jersey? Did it get the body?
Right.
Some of those, I don't care how tight of a replay you have or how clear of a replay you have, you're just not going to be able to tell because it's a 98-mile-an-hour fastball.
Mm-hmm.
You're not.
Mm-hmm.
Tag-up plays. Placement of runners, interference by runners when breaking up a double play. Should that be reviewable?
It depends. If you go outside the base pass, like if you slide really wide, maybe. I can see that.
The wireless communication, if approved, is experimental rule between the dugout and the catcher conducted to see if it improves pace of play.
Why's it got
to
be wireless?
Carry a big pack out there with the wire running into it. Catcher would wear an earpiece to hear the type of pitch the coaching staff wants thrown. Currently, many teams communicate with the catchers through, of course, different types of signs. Catcher can look
strike
at a wristband as well. Then he realized that's the pitcher. We want to see how this plays out. It is a one-year cycle experiment, and we can decide if we want to make it a permanent rule in the future.
Yeah, it's listen, I'm okay with it. I don't really have an issue with it. My first thing is with baseball, with any sport, is I want the calls right, is what I want. Second is the issue, like, you know, and I was watching this because for some reason I found myself watching a video of Sunbelt Media Days yesterday, and Steve Shaw was apparently their coordinator of officials too, and just watching some of this fact that Sunbelt is actually doing centralized replay, which is an interesting offshoot in itself. But I want the calls right. And
Shaw is very heavily involved with Sunbelt officiating as well.
He's their coordinator officials as well. Here's the thing I think that needs to be the biggest adjustment to these rules. If you challenge a call and get it right, you can challenge as many times as you want as long as you're getting it right. I don't like what you can challenge. I don't like that if you get one right, you get one more, and then that's it. But what if you get that one right, and then there's another call, and and it doesn't happen that often. It's not like a guy's going to be challenging 7 or 8 times in a game anyway.
Isn't that how tennis plays it? You get a certain number of challenges, and if you get it right, you don't lose it. I'm almost positive that's the way it works in tennis. Like, you don't get 4, and then if you get 4 right, that's it. That's your 4.
Yeah.
I agree with you. If you see something that other people don't, and you're right about what you see, you shouldn't technically be punished for that.
No, it doesn't. And I know if you get it right, you're technically be rewarded by getting another one. But what if there were 3 questionable calls in a game for you? That's not outside the realm of possibility. Three? I mean,
no, definitely not.
I mean, I don't expect Brett Bielema to come out there and challenge 11 to 12 times in a game. maybe this year he will. But if I were to see, you know, a call in the first that was like a crucial interception that was actually on the ground, maybe another fumble early in the second half, and then like in the last 5 or 6 minutes of a game, you know, there's another fumble that was not, you know. And I mean, I know they look at a lot of these things, and they look at fumbles almost all the time if they're close. So, you know, those aren't just the perfect examples. But there are situations that you should be able to, I think, if you continue to get them right, be reviewed. And I don't know why college football does it. College football doesn't even have a challenge rule, does it? It doesn't. I mean, they basically say, all right, we're going to stop this and correct, we're going to look at it.
Yeah. It comes from upstairs. It comes from an actual official.
I wouldn't mind allowing the coach to have a challenge in the SEC. I mean, or in college football. I wouldn't mind. Look, we don't want less college football. For whatever reason, we want more. So if we got an extra 4 minutes in a game, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what you said, too, as far as wanting to see people get it right. At the end of the day, that's what we want.
That's really all we care about. We don't want to yell at the end of the day, say, the officials absolutely hosed us.
Let's get to 10 After Tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweet!
They saved her for penalties.
Big Bill D tweets, wish you had asked about Cam getting a scholarship to Pitt. It's going back to our Davern Williams interview at 8:20. If you missed that, you can go to homesports.com and catch the podcast there.
Well, he did. So,
he got one, correct.
I'll tell you this. Man. And if you haven't watched it, you need to because that Cam guy actually bowed up to his coach.
Q's end zone tweets.
Boggles my mind that someone would do that.
It happens. At Cube Show, Tennessee needs to stop using the Q's emoji. Emoticon orange, emoticon orange, emoticon orange, emoticon orange, emoticon orange.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because they technically their mascot was. I think still is. I mean, it used to be
it's
like
not a big, an orange, but.
At one point, it was a big fat orange.
Yeah, but.
Like it was an orange blob.
Right, but it's not an. And the fruit.
No,
orange.
No, it's not like the orange bowl mascot, which is right. Just an orange.
Wayne Carter at RDC 12345 tweets at Cube Show, in conference only, will they hurt the SEC in out of conference play if they rely on it too much? Maybe
if they rely on it too
much. But you're still going to know your signals and your signs. So, how many non-conference games are these teams playing that are they really are that big of a deal? I mean, that they are in jeopardy of losing. Not
well,
a ton.
Be careful. A midweek Grambling game's going to cost you. But, you know, I mean, they play six or seven series at the beginning of the season.
But it could impact.
They play midweek games.
It could impact you with if you had to put in a reserve catcher middle of the year, and all of a sudden he is just going by the earpiece, and then when you get into postseason play, yeah, that could be a little confusing.
Will they rely on that? Do players rely too much on just looking at the sideline for play calls? I mean,
yeah,
we're doing everything we can basically not to have these guys actually play
or learn anything.
Like this is we're getting as close as we can to actually just giving these coaches joysticks.
Pocket Chat tweets at Cube Show. I get insanely irrationally annoyed by the catcher staring into the dugout between every pitch. So I guess I'm for wiring them up. In general, I would prefer the catcher just calling the game himself. But I guess in reality, any rule to force that would be too silly.
Yeah.
I wonder how many coaches really believe that if the catcher and pitcher were calling their own game, it would make that big of a difference. Now, if you're using stats and sabermetrics,
sure.
I see where you would believe that your philosophy would be correct. But if you've got a good pitcher and a good catcher, why would you not just trust them? I mean, we didn't have a coach calling. I mean, I caught some in high school. Our coach didn't call pitches. We called our own stuff. And if the pitcher didn't like it, he shook it off, and we went with something else.
Well, that was back in the mid-70s. Now, guys,
it was the 90s.
As much as you can take away from guys, I think it's the better. Because, again, you're talking about coaches whose livelihood's on the line. You're about to – people want to shore up the most that they can as far as, I don't want you to screw the signal up. You watch Last Chance U. Sorry to keep bringing that up. But how many times they just can't get the signal in? How many times are they getting the signaling wrong from the coach itself?
Remember Buddy Stevens lines yells get lined up a lot.
Remember when one of the assistant coaches for that very first game, because they were down like half their players, was trying to get in basic signals, and like they had a red wristband a white wristband on people, and he would say red, but the guy would hold up the white wristband.
Still called a couple timeouts.
You're like, guys, how I can't have this. Zach Taylor, best five Zach tweets at RK Shea. The situation with Auburn versus TAMU, as Texas A&M. I just like to say it shorter. Now it took longer to say it. In 2014, Malzahn uses a challenge. Late fumble on goal line is not reviewable. It was clear that Texas A&M took the ball from Cameron Artis Payne as he laid on the ground. Couldn't review it. Auburn lost. If you have the ability to challenge.
Good to hear that you've gotten over it.
It just sticks out, that's all. It's a very memorable game. It was very important in 2014.
Bueller tweets, did at Cole Kubik ever get red ass cold on a pitcher when called off? Baseball season usually warm, so no.
It's already red. Red everything.
No, I don't think I ever got mad about that.
But Zach does.
I have told you the story of when I refused to catch a pitcher's pitches, didn't I?
You can tell it real quick if you can. I've heard it, but it's been a while since you told it.
Darren Ravel tweets, Under Armour has Steph Curry through 2024 and Jordan Spieth through 2025. That's not a bad little duo to have linked up for the next.
Yeah, fair enough.
8 or 9
fair
years.
Enough. Hey, let me just.
So we were playing. Go ahead.
Yeah, hold on. I was going to mention Zach. Bring again if you can challenge. But then again, how many times have you seen a fumble challenge like a fumble reviewed, and like come back and been like the opposite of what you thought it was going to be? You're like, what? It happens to me at least a dozen times a season. Where like the referee will come in. The call stands on the field is a fumble. Like, what? You did? Yeah, no. You looked at it.
No, it's indisputable video evidence is what you have to have, and sometimes whatever. You don't.
So we were
playing probably, this is early high school, so what would that be like, 14, 15-year-old baseball? So this is like right before you started playing high school baseball.
Like 84.
And we had this kid, his name was Matt Miller, and his father is actually his stepdad, was the team's coach. And this is when they dispersed, you know, all of the kids who made the middle school team around the Park League teams. We're playing Park League. So you got like two middle school kids on a team. It was me and my buddy Chris Benton. And a lot of the other teams got three because their daddies were the coaches. So whatever. We were on like the no one cares about that team. And so this kid, Matt Miller, threw left-handed, and they had just built West Homewood Park. It was a brand-new baseball field. They just built it. It was nice at the time. It's not anymore. And it was deep. It was a long park. I think it was like 310, 315, 320, maybe even down the lines, and went to like 405 and center. It was a big park. And so we're playing this other team, and my buddy of mine, Trent Coron, is a left-handed kid. He was on the high school team. And he comes up his first at bat, and he parks one. And he hits it like over the playground that was like 20 yards past the fence in right field. And I was like, wow, he smashed that ball. Now, this dude threw like 78 and had no movement on his fastball. And so Trent Coron comes up again a couple innings later. Gone. Yard. Parks it. And I'm like, all right, so this is enough. You know, and I'm kind of looking over to his stepdad. He's not doing anything. I'm like, okay, so I come in. After that inning, we get three outs, and I go to a stepdad, and I said, we're just going to leave him in? And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, we're down like 6-0, and he's just getting balls hit 500 feet. We're not going to warm anybody up? We got no other option? He goes, no, he's good. And I was like, all right, cool. So the next time Trent Coron comes up, I go to the mound, I call timeout, and I was like, we're walking him. And he's like, no, I'm not. And I said, yeah, you are. I said, either hit him or throw four balls in the dirt or let me step out and throw him. He goes, I'm not walking him. He's like, this is Park League baseball. That's stupid. And I said, what's stupid is the two 500-foot home runs you've given up to him today. Walk him or I don't catch the ball. And he's like, okay, I'm not walking him. So I go back. I get my stance, and I'm in my catcher stance. And he throws one about 2 inches above my mask. And I don't move my glove. And it hits the umpire in the face mask. And the ump's like, what was that? And I was just like, I told him I'm not catching these balls. And he's like, well, you're both going to get thrown out if I get hit again.
I'm sure he understood.
He said, you're both out of the game if I get hit again. And I said, well, then you better duck. And so he throws another one, and it's like a little bit outside, and I don't even move. And it goes to the backstop. So, of course, stepdaddy comes running out. Well, what? And he calls timeout. He wants me to come to the mound. What's going on out here? What's the problem? And I said, I told him, he can either walk him or I'm not catching the ball. Throw it at his ribs or his face and hit him, or let me step out and catch balls and we'll walk him. And he said, I said, he didn't want to do it. So he takes me out of the game.
For that?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's like, Cole, you're out. So-and-so, you're going in to catch. I'm like, good luck with that. So I sat on the bench.
Did you guys come back and win?
No, I think I went and got in my car and went home, actually.
Oh, okay, good.
I don't think I stayed for the end of the game.
That went over well, too, I bet.
No, actually, he let me pitch the next game, and I pitched a two-hitter.
Oh, you guys really were the team that nobody cared about.
Oh, yeah. He put me on the mound the next game, and my buddy Kevin Stanica, who played tight end on the football team, was the only guy that got a hit. He got two hits in that game, and that was it. We won, like, 1-0. Park League ball is the best, man, because if you hit a ball to the outfield, like, this is what I was the biggest BS player in Park League. If I hit a ball to the outfield, I just kept running. Because my mindset was, what are the chances that you guys are going to, one, make an accurate throw, two, catch the ball and make an accurate tag? It's like 10% that's really going to happen.
I'm playing the odds here.
Yeah. Unless you just get me rounding a base and the guy has a chance to scoop it, keep it in front of him, pick it up, and then apply tag, there's about no chance you're throwing me out. Every time I got on first, steal second, steal third, first two pitches, every time. Why? You're not throwing anybody out in that league. You're just not doing it. Mark Schlabaugh joins us next. All right, welcome back in. Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Excited to welcome in Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN to the show. Excellent write-up yesterday just on this Ole Miss situation with Hugh Freeze and sort of how it went down, how it happened. Mark, how you doing this morning? Mark, you there?
Yeah, you got me?
Got you. Sorry, that was on us, I believe. Nice write-up by you with this Ole Miss-Hugh Freeze scenario and just sort of how it went down. When you went back and looked, and the name of the article is How a Single Phone Call Led to Hugh Freeze's Downfall. When you went back and just sort of figured out how this phone call was, I guess, discovered, I mean, what are the odds of that even happening? How surprised were you to find out that that's even the way that this thing was brought to life?
Yeah, I mean, it's so SEC, it's so Mississippi. I mean, you've got this recruiting writer from Mississippi State, Steve Robertson, who, you know, does not look like a recruiting writer. He's got dreadlocks, his arms are covered in tattoos. He's got the Mississippi State logo tattooed on his left hand, but he was writing a book about Ole Miss football, an investigative book, because he was fed up that none of the in-state writers were writing about it. And then he gets hooked up with Houston Nutt's attorney, Thomas Mars, who once worked for Hillary Clinton and was Walmart's general counsel. And they get to working together, and they actually requested phone records because they wanted to find a phone call that Hugh Freeze had made to a sports writer. And when they filed, when Mars filed the request, he requested the day before and the day after, so Ole Miss wouldn't know exactly what he was looking for, and that's where Robertson found the call to the escort service.
And it is true, correct me if I'm wrong, that Freeze had the opportunity to redact that call and just missed it.
Yeah, he redacted three personal calls and then just missed that 313 number. But Cole, I actually called Hugh 2 weeks ago about this call. I was in California on a different assignment, and it was the day before he was supposed to appear at SEC Media Days in Hoover, and I got a couple of calls saying Hugh's not showing up. There's some call to an escort service in Tampa, and at the time I thought that it was an allegation that they were calling escort services for recruits, and he was recruiting a tight end from Tampa. And I called Hugh, and he didn't know anything about it. He said, let me get with my administration, and I'll call you back. And he called me back 2 or 3 hours later and said, I was in Tampa. It was a 313 number. I misdialed. It was less than a minute and never showed up again. So, you know, I kind of took him at his word. And obviously, when they did a more extensive search of his records and went back to 2012, they found what Ross Bjork called a troubling pattern.
Do you believe in Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN? With us, follow him on Twitter, at Mark Schlabaugh. Do you think that's about how the conversation probably sounded between Bjork and Freeze when it was first addressed?
Yeah, I think they felt like that. You know, that it was a misdial because the number never showed up again. But then Ross, to his credit, decided to do a more extensive search to cover all his bases, and it was he and Hugh Freeze's attorney, a university attorney, and somebody from within the athletics department, I would assume somebody in compliance, who went through that, I think he said it was about 39,000 phone calls, and they found some other calls that Hugh had to address.
Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN with us talking Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze. His story is at the front of the college football page at ESPN.com. Now, you brought it up saying that you thought that there might be something to this service being called for a recruit. And a lot of people have said this and sort of gone this direction. Is there anything that you've seen since this has been made public that still leads you to believe that?
No, you know, I asked Ross Bjork again yesterday in Oxford if they had any evidence that escort services were being called for recruits. And he said no, that it was for Freeze's own personal reasons. But yeah, I mean, it's we'll see what happens in Indianapolis. I mean, it's you know, I think it's going to be really difficult for them to go up to Indianapolis in front of the infractions committee and argue that Hugh Freeze conducted his program with compliance and followed the rules and did things the right way when you have these issues.
Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN joining us. One of the biggest surprises for me, Mark, was that when this was announced by Ross Bjork and Chancellor Jeffrey Vitter, that Bjork was pretty adamant when he stated that there was no buyout, there was no settlement, and that if Freeze did not resign, they would have fired him with cause. Were you surprised as I was to see that just based on everything else that's floating around with Ole Miss right now, and it basically gives Freeze the ability to go talk to whoever he wants to about whatever he wants to?
Yeah, a little bit. But, I mean, you know, Bjork told me yesterday that, you know, somebody asked him if he thought that, you know, there could be some legal maneuvering down the road to try to recoup some of Freeze's lost money. And he said, no, I think our contract's pretty cut and dry. You know, I think they gave him an opportunity to resign to kind of save face and accept responsibility, and he did that. But, yeah, if he hadn't, they were definitely going to fire him with cause. He's got a moral turpitude clause within his contract, which allowed them to fire him without having to pay him another penny. I think Ross is hurt. I mean, he and Freeze were tight, and Bjork stood shoulder to shoulder with Freeze over the last 18 months, defended him, you know, through two notice of allegations, through Laramie Tunsil's mess and everything else. And, you know, Ross, if you take him his word, had no idea this was happening.
Visiting with Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN, you've covered a lot of collegiate coaches. You've covered other college scandals. How do you foresee Hugh Freeze, if at all, bouncing back from this and potentially coaching in college again?
I think it's going to be difficult, obviously. You know, I think a lot depends on what happens in Indianapolis. If he's found guilty of failure to monitor his staff and Ole Miss is found guilty of lack of institutional control, I mean, he could certainly be hit with a show cause. He could certainly be hit with a 5-6-game suspension for when he came back. So I think, you know, with this personal issue hanging over his head and a potential show cause, I think it's going to be hard for him to find a job. But Bobby Petrino's coaching, so I guess anything's possible.
Mark, when something like this happens, everybody seems to want the coach's head and the athletic director's head, and a lot of people are asking for Ross Bjork's head and why he hasn't been terminated as of this point. You brought up that Ross seems hurt by this. Do you think that he went to bat for him because he believed so much in Hugh Freeze, and maybe he just got, you know, bamboozled like a lot of people did with Hugh Freeze and some of his tendencies to maybe not be completely forthright with everything?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but I go back to what a Baylor booster told us last year, and that's that it's hard to screw up awesome, and nobody wants to screw awesome up. You know, Ole Miss was winning like they'd rarely won before. I mean, two back-to-back New Year's Six bowl games. They beat Alabama twice. You know, when you're at a place that has struggled and been mediocre for so long, when you finally have some success, you know, you kind of get a little drunk by it, I guess, for lack of a better description. But, you know, I think Ross did point out yesterday that he didn't hire Hugh. You know, he got here 3 or 4 months after Freeze was hired. But I think Ross Bjork's future, I think a lot of it depends on what happens in Indianapolis as well. If you know, if they're found guilty of lack of institutional control, I think his job could certainly be in jeopardy too.
That was going to be my next question. Is does his job directly tie to what happens in Indianapolis this fall? And you seem to think it does.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think Jeffrey Vitter and the administration probably doesn't want to go in front of the Committee on Infractions without their head coach and without the athletics director. So, you know, there's still a lot. Look, there's still a lot left in this case. I mean, you've got the Rebel Rags lawsuit that's pending, and that attorney is trying to depose Kobe Jones and Leo Lewis, two Mississippi State players. So I think there's a lot more that comes out before this thing's resolved.
That's going to be a crazy ending. If you had to project out right now, that second bowl ban seems to be sort of the big if, and sort of the big swinging pendulum of just if this is going to be a borderline death penalty for Ole Miss or not. Do you expect that to go down for the Ole Miss program?
I can't gauge whether or not firing or getting rid of Hugh Freeze helps them or hurts them, or if it even matters. They've just been so not defiant, but you know, they've butted heads with the NCAA for so long over this and stood behind Hugh Freeze, and then all of a sudden you're firing him and saying, you know, he's a guy that lacks morals in his personal life. So I think it's going to be really, really difficult to argue it.
Mark, great stuff, man. Really do appreciate the time. Always good catching up. Look forward to seeing you soon.
See you soon, Cole. Thank you.
Mark Slaybaugh of ESPN. So, you know, Mark brings up an intriguing part of this, Arky, that we haven't really spoke on, and that is there are still so many different tentacles to this and so many different things and directions that could affect the way that this goes. I think maybe the oddest part, the strangest part about this whole deal is that this hearing is going to take place during the season. I mean, how that just to me seems like, why?
Yeah.
Why could the NCAA not find a way to say, we'll do it in August, or we'll do it, make you wait through the season? Just the timing just seems... It seems almost inappropriate.
The timing is just a product of just whatever always happens in cases like this. Nothing ever happens until the last moment that it has to. And everyone files their extensions, they file their responses, they file their angry rebuttals, and then finally you get another notice of allegations, and you have to respond to that, and everything just takes the, you know, you have like 30 days, 90 days, depending on what it is, to respond to things. And everyone wants every moment to be able to put together their defense or to put out their offense. Or the NCAA is waiting to see if they get anything else that shows up in a case like this when Ole Miss decides to go in front of them. And I get it from an NCAA standpoint, because when Ross Bjork and Jeffrey Vitter, the vice chancellor, when they show up, you want to have every piece of information that you can get up to that day to say, did you also know about this or this, if it happens to show up. And that's the part that's mostly unfortunate for the guys who are on this team, is that not only is your head coach gone, not only do you have a postseason ban, not only do you know you're going to have some kind of sanctions against your team, but now it's going to happen in the middle of the season.
Yeah. And like, just, like they need another distraction.
Like they just need one more kick in the ass to say, here's another thing that's going wrong here with you guys.
Another one.
Like if you could get something in like July, you're like, okay, we can at least put this past us. But if you're 3-4 games into a season and then you find out what your fate's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a giant buzzkill. Whoever they play that week, they'll probably lose to.
Before we go to break, Bueller tweets in at Cube Show. I think Ad Arkishe is onto something when he suggested, quote, timing of the requested dates of the phone records. Coincidental, question mark? Expand on what you believe there.
Well, it's clear that the attorney for Houston Nutt or somebody close knew something and knew something about Hugh Freeze's activity and knew something about the timing of that activity, that he asked for the specific date when he knew the activity was going
to
be.
So you think they wanted him in Tampa? While he was in Tampa?
I think he may have gotten...
See, a lot of this, I think, is being projected as a complete accident, that they just stumbled upon this phone.
Not when you ask for 1 week of records, one specific week of phone records. They didn't ask for, like, all his phone records.
Even if you believe that that's when he was...
for one specific week.
You believe that, even if potentially that's when they believed he was making the calls to reporters and trying to change the narrative of what they all believed was... Hugh Freeze trying to smear Houston Nutt and blame all of this on him?
Yeah. I don't think there's a coincidence about this. I don't think you're looking – I think you're looking for a specific – I think the phone calls to the reporters are a bonus that you can get. But I think what you're looking for specifically is something that you knew during that short period of time. To throw them off the trail, they asked for day before and day after, so they didn't know you were specifically looking at that one date. So you're like, well, okay, you want these 3 days? That's fine. You want this week? I think they ended up being like 5 or 6 days that they could look for. Somebody knew something, and I don't know which one specifically knew that there was a little bit of tawdry tale to be possibly had there, but someone knew something and then looked at into wow. that number, and in the story, if you read from Mark Schlabaugh, that when the Mars attorney called the Robertson guy, who is the big Mississippi State homer, who is also an attorney, when he called him and said what that phone number was related to, he screamed an expletive in joy.
No,
that's what it said in the story.
It's one of the funnier parts of the story, actually.
It's almost like a "we got him" kind of moment.
Oh yeah. That's exactly what it was.
And then to be able to go back and to research those numbers and just go to Ole Miss and say, hey, you may need to look into some of your guys' phone records.
He asked me to fill in some blanks, Robertson said. When Robertson told Mars to enter the phone number into Google, Mars was silent for nearly a minute before yelling an expletive in excitement. What do you think it was?
F yeah!
Well, it just says an expletive. It doesn't say another word.
Oh. Or, well, I guess hell yeah wouldn't be really much of an expletive.
Like S word?
But is that the bad thing?
Like then? Shoot.
Shoot! We got him!
We'll debate that during the break. Back with TV listings and another one next. I was reading an interesting article on the Redskins offensive line. Trent Williams dubbing
them. Do you just seek out offensive line articles?
No, actually, someone sent this to me, and I'm glad they did. It's pretty cool. Trent Williams is dubbing them the Hogs 2.0. And listen, they've got a really good offensive line. Ari Quanjo is a member of that group. But Trent Williams has gone vegan. And since we're about to head to our TV listings, the reason that he did is because of a Netflix documentary that he recently watched entitled What the Health. Have you heard of this?
No, I've heard of other documentaries that sort of scare people into things like that. There was one that got people into like juicing really good, too. It was like Food Inc. or something like that.
Like Juicy J?
Yep, that was it. Juicy J. How'd you guess?
But I'm just thinking about NFL offensive linemen going vegan. That seems very difficult.
Well, hey, listen, Prince Fielder went vegan a couple of years ago, and that worked out for him, right? Isn't he retired?
Correct, but he also said it didn't last very long.
Well, listen, you you can't play sports as a red-blooded male in this day and age and not eat meat at some point. You can play some sport. Like, you can do gymnastics. You can do you might be able to do lacrosse. But sports where you need a little meat on your bones, to get meat on your bones, you got to get meat.
What the Health, a 92-minute documentary on Netflix that, quote, examines the link between diet and disease. So maybe we should check that out. What would it take for you to go vegan? What exactly does vegan mean? Is vegan just not eating meat? It goes a lot further than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think vegetarian is not meat. I think vegan is about not eating anything comes from animals, milk and cheese. And
according to Vegan Kit,
that would kill my entire diet. Oh my god!
VeganKit.com. A vegan diet is one that consists of only plant-derived foods. Yeah. Vegans don't use or consume any animals or animal products, including flesh, land or sea animals, milk, eggs, or honey. Eating vegan doesn't require breaking the bank or moving to a big city.
You can go outside and eat your grass for free. I get it. First of all, bees aren't animals. They're terrible people. They suck. Honey's okay, but it's not that good. We shouldn't have to have bees. And it's a flaw in Mother Nature that we have to have bees rub their butt on stuff to pollinate things. Mother Nature should have come up with something better than that, so we wouldn't have to be worried about bees. That's a Mother Nature problem.
I'm just wondering what are you eating? Salads every day?
Yeah. You ever had a kale milkshake without the milk, without the liquid? Just mulch? You like mulch? Mulch is good. How that algae taste?
Mm-hmm. Mulch.
You like tofu? You ever had tofurkey? I've had tofurkey. That's an abomination to food.
According to health.com, if you go vegan, you'll have to find new protein sources. Every meal should contain protein, says vegan dietitian Valerie Roser. Proteins are the building blocks of life. They break down into amino acids, produce cell growth and repair. Institute of Medicine recommends adults get at least 0.8 grams of proteins daily for every kilogram of body mass, so 54 grams for a 150-pound woman. Best sources of vegan protein include natural soy, lentils, beans, quinoa. Yikes.
You know what else is protein? Chicken. I'm eating chicken. I'm eating a lot of chicken. I'm eating chicken right now. Eggs. I don't know if that's protein. It comes from a chicken.
You could eat donuts. Vegan diet.
Is that protein?
No, but it's vegan, isn't it? It's not made by an animal.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of what goes into it. Where's flour come from? Is that a grain? Okay, so that's okay. What's the icing stuff? I don't know.
I don't know if I could do it, man.
You can't. But you shouldn't. You shan't.
Wow.
You shan't not do that.
Okay.
And all you who are listening are vegans, stop listening to the show ever again. You don't need to be part of our demographic.
I want you to tweet it and tell me how you did it.
That's awful.
I want to hear from someone that did it.
You're not going to get any tweets. You're not going to get any. God, that's an awful way to live.
This might be the biggest hot button topic that we've had with you.
Meat.
This is like on tap with Tebow.
Do you understand how delicious meat is?
Tebow, vegan, and what else have really upset you here on the show? Transfers?
I don't know if transfers gives me as high as
Stevens.
This brings
Cam Carter, Tebow, and vegan.
Oh, listen, Cam, I just like to make fun of a little bit. Just like, wow, I can't believe that guy's actually I can, because everybody lets people go, because if you're good at football, you can do whatever you want. Honest to God, though, it is the worst. No, that's not true.
What does it say?
Our intern Farrah just passed me a note that's about to make me throw up. Cole, you want to read that out loud?
Tebow goes vegan sometimes.
I knew there was a reason I hated that guy.
He eats like 5 avocado a day.
Yeah, but he's got to eat like a chicken or something. A turkey? Turkey's okay. That's a meat.
Ask Laura tomorrow.
Turkey's
good.
She's
been upset with him for a year.
Ask him if he goes vegan?
Yeah, ask Laura tomorrow.
You can't
She'll
go
know.
Vegan sometimes. That's ridiculous. Hmm.
Sure you can. It could be something you do during the season.
I have a vegan day every now and then, and then I go back to my chicken and eggs and cheese.
Maybe while he's training for SEC Nation, he goes vegan. And
you understand,
then when he goes baseball, he needs meat.
We have cows that are so yummy.
Yeah.
Have you ever had porterhouse?
I have, but I also like animals. I'm considering this.
I'm not asking you to eat your dog.
I'm thinking about it.
I'm not asking you to go to Korea and eat your dog. I'm asking you to eat.
I like all animals.
Cows. Yummy, nummy cows. And chickens. Chickens aren't even fun. No one likes chickens.
Man, my mother will be so mad if I went vegan. She'd have to make something weird every time I come
Man.
Over.
Man.
She already tries to make paleo.
I don't, first of all, vegetables
By
are
the way, vegan is like the opposite of paleo.
Vegetables, first of all, are like the work of the devil, okay? That's the first thing. Secondly, meat is so yummy. These people must not have had good meat or any meats.
It's Trent Williams. You don't think he's ever had good meat?
How do you make a decision like this?
That documentary must be powerful. Maybe
it
you should not watch it.
You got this guy's
I'm watching
too
it tonight. I'm watching it tonight.
You know, there's a,
what the hell?
There is a point in this
call Catered Fit tonight and tell him I want only veggies tomorrow for my breakfast.
In Last Chance U, where they're talking about the election. And man, just hearing these guys just spout off things they've heard on Fox News or
you think
CNN.
They just forced that in. Were just like, hey, it's an election year. Let's make sure we get it in a little bit.
You don't want to feel like they ignored it or something, right? I mean, it is a big deal for them. But to hear things I've literally heard echoed on Fox News and CNN 1,000 times, which is hilarious.
No, the whole.
Because you know how susceptible they are.
The fact that they just pushed that in there, it was so blatantly obvious that they were like, hey, this is really hot button. Let's get it in.
I like it. Like, man, I ain't voting Hillary. I ain't voting Trump. I vote for other dude. What's his name? Sanders? Yeah, Sanders. Go vote for Sanders then.
We got domestic violence, prostitution. Now let's get politics in there. Yes, Hugh Freeze was in there. That's how they snuck that in.
There's prostitution in there?
Hugh Freeze was in there.
Oh, I guess. Okay, that's escort service. It's different. It's cleaner that way. He wants a girlfriend experience.
He's going to dinner.
Not a hooker.
They're going to eat vegan.
That's right.
All right, we're back tomorrow, 6 to 10 a.m. The Roundtable's next.